Jocks.
Sharks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
We are live.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. A little late this morning. No biggie. We're here. We still got all the news that's fit to print. Is that what they say? Who was that? Was that who was all the news that's fit to print? Was that
New York Times?
The masthead of the New York Times.
Really? What about now? All the news that's not fit to print. So did you?
It's the parody of that, of course, is what I think they used to have on Mad Magazine, which said all the news that fits.
God, you know what the? I don't think they have it anymore in this day when you can't be near as disruptive toward people. The motto of the Notre Dame, the Observer, the top they would have, university motto: there's no reason for it; it's just our policy.
Well, the masthead.
Pretty close to the truth, you know.
The masthead of the now defunct Rocky Mountain News out here, which when we were cadets, we used to quote all the time when we were marching in the snow or rain, was, "'Tis a privilege to live in Colorado."
Well, I guess.
And in some cases, I mean, I think that's correct, to live out here and see the scenery and everything else. The natural beauty here is spectacular. I don't think it's a privilege because of our politics, which are rapidly headed in the direction of California, but the scenery and the weather here is just spectacular.
Well, I don't think the politics, and probably don't want to get into it, but the politics has to find a way to get their arms around the fact that only a few people seem to have all the money. It's a whole different society, and how you apportion wealth that way is a struggle. I mean, when you talk about economics, is really the science of apportioning scarcity.
Right.
And when you know, I talk about Colorado way back in the day. We used to go skiing every day, right? We'd go in the wintertime and the place is, you know, it's alive. We used to go to Steamboat, but once in a while we'd go somewhere else. And we went to Jackson a couple times and whatever. And people would say, you really have to come out in the summer, because that's when Colorado is really gorgeous, right? So we did. One year we took a ride out, and we spent some time in Steamboat. We spent some time in Breckenridge. One of the guys did some fishing. Of course, he never caught any fish, but he did some fishing. I was astounded, Lou. We're talking 80 somewhere, and... Actually, probably was 87, actually, right before the crash. And so in Breckenridge, they had every bar took turns having like dollar pitcher night or something. And the same, I use the term losers, would go from place to place, and every happy hour bar was mobbed and the other places weren't. So finally, after about the second night, I meet this young lady, and, you know, we were nothing romantic or anything, but she was a social worker out there, and she was saying that in the wintertime, you know, everybody's pretty flush with all the tourist money and everything. She goes, in the summer, she goes, Steamboat's a little different because it's a big trading community, because of it's actually a bunch of farms and ranches out there. So the Steamboat is actually the county seat and all that stuff, and it's a pretty good place. And all the rest of these places, especially Breckenridge back then in the summertime, she goes, there's nobody here. Everybody's living in trailers. They've spent all their money from the winter. The incidence of alcoholism and child wife abuse is dramatic. She goes, I am busy as hell, essentially, in the summertime. And I'd never known that, you know. And she said, yeah, in the summer. Now, I'm sure that has all, I won't say all, she said, but that it has probably changed. But she goes, it's definitely not a box of chocolates here in the summertime. And everybody's living in a trailer, it's hot as hell. And, you know, that was, you know, a long time ago, but a lot of places aren't as good as you think they are if you don't have an all-year economy.
So
I'm sure it's
obviously
changed.
That's totally changed.
Yeah, I imagine now. It is.
It's because the ski resorts got smart and started marketing themselves as year-round destinations. So you've got now whitewater rafting, and you've got music festivals and things like that, and they've picked up, but. For the ski guys, you know, a lot of them make big bucks over the 4 or 5 months of solid skiing. these ski instructors and these folks, and then they go to Florida and draw unemployment, or Texas or California and draw unemployment. I had a couple of instructors that I knew up there, and this was a thing. So, you know,
They draw unemployment from Colorado, right? You can't get unemployment in Florida if you didn't work there.
They were drawing unemployment from Colorado, but the guys in California could draw unemployment from California. They'd go out and go to work at a burger bar or someplace, and for a, you know, 3 or 30 days, get the eligibility and then draw unemployment. So it just, yeah. This is, economics is the art of dealing with scarcity. It's also the science of rational decision making, in terms of, you know, people going for where the reward is. I wanted to lead with sort of an arcane discussion point, but one that has some relevance because I just got back from an overseas trip, and that is that the strength of the U.S. passport apparently has declined, because we're not getting visa-less entry into as many countries as we used to. And so this was brought home to me directly, because you now require it's a formality, but you now require a visa to go into the UK, which, you know, we didn't have anything like that. And Europe is about to institute an EU-wide visa program that will affect U.S. travelers going over there as well. Now, the EU thing has been in discussion for years.
When you go, do you go for business or for pleasure?
Well, this time it was for pleasure. But it doesn't matter. You know, you still have to have the visa. They do want to know why you're going over. But the visa, for example, for the UK is good for 2 years, or as long as your passport is good.
Where'd you get the visa? On a plane?
No, you have to apply for it before you get to the airport.
So I can't just fly to London tomorrow?
Nope.
Does anybody know that other than you?
Well, see, this is an entertaining point. So when I book through United to travel somewhere, on the United app, up comes a notice saying, you'll need a visa for these countries, or you're flying into this airport, you're going to need this, and that pops up. But I booked this time on British Airways, and British Airways did not put anything in there about, oh, by the way, this EU visa program just went into it, or a UK visa program just went into effect, and you're going to have to apply. Apparently, what it does is it links, you know, it links. Some biometric data, a recent picture of you, and some other things, to your passport. They don't stamp your passport anymore. You get in, go through customs. You basically look at a camera. They take your picture. They match the picture with the photo, the face through face recognition, with the record of the passport they have on file, plus your visa, in which you have declared that you are not a felon, you haven't committed a felony ever. You declare that you're not, you haven't engaged in human trafficking and some other odd questions, and you know, this is all in the database, and that gets you through customs. You're not even doing the interview. You know, it used to be you'd walk up, there'd be a customs agent or a border agent right there. They'd take your passport, they'd look at the picture, they'd look at you, they'd look at the picture again. They might flip through the passport to see where your stamps were from, you know, what countries have you visited. And then they would ask you, are you here for business or pleasure? You know, where are you? I mean, in the UK, they would ask you, where are you staying? What's the name of your hotel? Sometimes they would ask you, do you have enough money to support yourself and your trip return home? This kind of thing. That doesn't happen anymore.
Now, right, so what happens if you didn't have it and you get on? They send you home, or they wouldn't let you on a plane?
Yeah, they would stop you. They would stop you there and turn you around.
How many people have been turned around that don't know?
I don't know. You may, and it's because it's an online application. they may give you, I haven't heard of this happening, but they may give you the option to go into a holding area. And then while you're in the holding area, you make the application and apply and then come back in. But you definitely will not get past border control if, when they look at your passport and scan your passport, there is not a UK-linked visa to that, current UK-linked visa to that passport.
Kevin wants to know if this is a link to the UK's Digital ID initiative.
This has been ongoing, apparently in the works for a while. It may well be linked to that, but as I understood it, digital ID is only going to apply to British citizens. So I don't think it's going to tie to that. But obviously, if you're a UK citizen, and if you have dual UK citizenship, you might have an
issue. Are you telling me I should chop and get my Irish passport?
No, I'm just saying that you've got the reduction in the strength of the U.S. passport is based in part on our tightening our border up, and that means countries are going to require visas from our citizens when they go overseas. Even because we're requiring more border checks. The EU visa, which the British visa, I think, is about $32, £26. The EU visa is less than that, I think, but I think you have to apply every time you go. So these requirements are. I mean, it's ironic.
Is a visa a card, or what is it?
It's an electronic. It's an electronic marker that resides in the country that you're visiting, that is linked to your passport and your passport.
So
data
when you show them the passport, they know that you applied for and have a visa.
Right. Well, you don't even show your passport. You hand your passport over, but you basically step in front of a camera that does a face check, looks at your facial features. And then says, okay, that face matches this record. This record has a visa. This record is matched to this passport. And this person is who they say they are.
Every border crossing everywhere has these things?
Not every border crossing, but the UK border crossing and going into Schengen, the EU, will have that. I think it takes effect in January of next year. Now, This is designed in large part to deal with the load on global entry points like Heathrow Airport and some other places where you've got a lot of people coming into the country, and you want to move them through border control in a safe and effective way.
If you're the only person in the world that knows this, how do they not get 10,000 people a day that they got to ship home?
Well,
how the hell do you ship home?
I'm not the only person that knows it, because when I arrived in London, there was not a backlog of people being turned away at the border control stations. But what it does, what I don't like about it is you're not getting stamps in your passport, which I always thought were kind of cool. You know, you could look at your passport and see stamps and look, oh yeah, I was there at this point. And I was quite happy. A couple of years ago, I took a trip down the Danube from Vienna to the Black Sea, and we were on a riverboat. And as the boat touched either side of the Danube River, because Hungary and Romania and I want to say Bulgaria were not in part of Schengen at that point, they weren't part of the EU. Every time we would go from the north side of the Danube to the south side of the Danube, we were crossing a border. And we got a passport stamp. So I've got passport stamps in Cyrillic from these little towns going down the Danube, and every time we crossed over. And it's kind of cool to look at your passport and say, oh, I got there. But on this last trip to London, I just looked at the camera. The border agent said, okay, you're cleared. And I don't even think I did a deal, dealt with a border agent. I put my passport face down on the scanner. The camera looked at me, and the little gates, you know, flashed green and opened up, and I was cleared to proceed. So this is, again, maybe we're performing a service for our listeners. If you're going to the UK anytime soon, you need to have one of these visas. And it takes 10 minutes to apply for it online. It's like $32, and you'll be in the system for 2 years. Not that I go to London every 2 years or
so. You got to pay to go in now too. It's part of the deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's going to be the same for the EU.
Well, yeah, we are making friends and influencing people. We need maybe to put Dale Carnegie in the White House for a couple of weeks for lessons.
The EU visa was instituted as part of the Biden administration's tightening down on international crime. And that's the irony is that the EU opened up open borders and let in millions of people that they didn't bother to vet, just like we did. And now all of a sudden they're putting this passport control program in place. Now, this is effectively, as Kevin noted, this is effectively a digital ID. It's not formal in the sense that you're carrying it, but you've got a digital ID now tracking you. We have had that for years here in the United States with face recognition at our airports, where Homeland Security, in lieu of tracking a paper passport, which can be forged or copied, now there's a digital record that is a little more secure, but harder to replicate, and has your facial characteristics flagged. We did have trouble getting out of London because our passports weren't scanning on the reader that we were trying to use, and an agent actually had to physically take the passport and run it over. It was kind of this really interesting device. It was a rod that was attached to a console, but the rod had it looked like it had been it had ridges on it, like big thick ridges, like it was like a stylized curtain rod, big thick ridges on this rod, and she ran the passport over it, and that gave her whatever validation she needed, and she said, okay, your passports are now cleared.
So if you'd have hopped in the tunnel, then you need this again when you get into France. You need the EU one.
You don't need it. Well, you don't need the EU visa yet. It goes into effect in January, but yeah. Yes. And not just me, any British citizen would, because Britain's not a member of the EU.
So I should get my Irish passport.
Well, the Irish people are, so yeah. And it gets really interesting when you're doing this, over a number of borders, because when I was traveling in Italy, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and residing there effectively, I was bouncing around with a lot of different stamps in my passport, and there's always that moment of hesitation. You hand the passport over, and you're literally at the hands of whoever the passport control agent is thinking. And if they don't like your resemblance, if they don't think it looks like you, then you got trouble. But now with this digital system, it doesn't even get to that point. The camera, the computer recognizes you, looks at you, and says, okay, good to go.
Whenever something like this happens, Lou, there's always the economic side of it and who's making money off it. And I just, there was a guy who wrote into this Quora, and the question was, somebody was bitching about the real IDs here. And the guy traced back that it was all because of 9/11.
Yeah.
We needed these real IDs. Yet not one of the guys who blasted anybody came into this country with a driver's license. So what manner of moron hooked the two together? And why was that? They all came in on a passport.
Because we don't require internal passports, the closest universal ID card that Americans carry is their driver's license.
Yeah, but this is not Nazi Germany. Your papers, please. Actually, it is if you're Hispanic in Chicago now, but that's another story.
Well, I mean, this is... we should have a discussion on this for an entire...
But do we want... Is episode. That the society we want? I mean, who says we do?
It's the society we're getting, though. We are moving from a high-trust society, and I'm using political science terms now. we're using from a moving from a high trust society to a low trust society. In a high trust society, you don't have a substantial amount of law breaking. You don't have the kind of organized criminal theft that we saw with the, for example, to use a recent example close to you, the Somali gangs that are operating, that are still operating in Minnesota, that stole $500 million in COVID relief. You don't have the kind of organized criminal functions operating in like that you do, for example, in Illinois.
What do you call the organized crime that is front running every White House announcement? They're not Somalis.
Well,
they're not Mexican.
That's potential, what are they? Yeah, I mean that's a potential marker of it too, and that's been going on for some time. We're moving from a culture that was, as I said, high trust to a culture that's low trust. And in a low trust culture, you know, people, because of the fraud and theft, you need to verify who people are. You need to verify that the money's there, that the money is going to the right place. You need to verify that your wire transfer is actually the going to the correct account. With double and triple security. You need to confirm that your credit card is not being scammed by some guy walking by with an RFID reader. You need to confirm that your government entity.
Well, you're confirming to. I'm saying the idea that the justification of a real ID, which is a royal pain in the butt, especially if you are a renter. I mean, or because you there's a lot of people that live at a place that don't get a utility bill, but that's their home. If you lived at home, which you know you can't because your parents aren't around, neither are mine. But how do you walk in with three utility bills in your name?
Well, I was under the impression. So my real ID. I've had real ID for some time. My understanding was that you could validate this with a birth certificate, for example.
No, you have to prove residency, like in three different spots.
Well. But
the reason I was easy for me is because I was getting my new driver's license anyway, and they sent me the thing in the mail. Hey, knucklehead, you got to up your driver's license. That letter was considered a marker that I lived there.
Yeah,
and that was one of the three. But it was I'm not sure if I needed my birth certificate if I did or not.
My understanding.
I know I gave them a stack of stuff. And they faxed it all down to Springfield. I didn't get my license for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, my understanding. Well, and that's Illinois screwing up the program.
Oh, why is that screwing it up? They didn't issue it there. They issued it from Springfield.
Yeah. But my point is that this has been in the works since 9/11, and it got put off and put off and put off because states like Illinois. Said, oh, we can't figure out how to comply.
Well, there's also been not another 9/11, and maybe people figured out that's not how those guys got on the planes, and it's a waste of time.
The value of being able to make sure that people are who they say they are is substantial for all kinds of government programs and all kinds of commercial transactions. And so, from the standpoint of security, this is a big deal, and. We are moving towards a system, at least with regard to our air transport, more akin to the Israeli system, in which when you step up for the airplane ticket, they know who you are. They know what your travel pattern, that your travel pattern does not include any red flags, and that you can proceed without having to take your shoes off, without getting strip searched, without getting strip searched, without having to have everything in your bag x-rayed. And so this is an advantage in many ways for transportation, and as I said, it marks our transition from a high trust culture to a low trust
culture.
Well,
I like the high trust culture better when everybody just walked on the plane and nothing ever happened.
Yeah, I do too, and those days are gone.
But are they really, or is it become such a money grabber for some people? I mean, how would you ever fire 60,000 TSA people and say you're not needed anymore?
Clearly, people are going to, the minute you put something like this in place, you're going to have people stampeding to make money. Absolutely. And you know, the TSA full employment thing is a legitimate gripe. You know, we could probably automate that system in many different ways. On the other hand, you know, I was coming through bag check. My passport thing was fine. My bags, I carry on bag and my backpack both get pulled for inspection. And the agent looks in there and he says, "What do you got in here?" And I said, "Well," he said, "is there anything in here like with consistency of like a paste?" And I said, "Well, there's two packages of this high-end fudge that I got from a candy merchant in downtown London." And he goes, "Oh, that's it." He goes, the algorithm spots that and flags it. And he said, what about the other bag? And I said, there's a package of Zapplesauce in there. And he said, "Applesauce?" I said, "Yep." And he said, that'll do it. And so Bill pulled those, looked at those, put them back in. We're all good to go. I guess at some point you could automate that system, but frankly, I'm sort of gratified that whatever system we're using is sensitive enough to pick up stuff like that and tell you, yeah, this might be an issue. Eventually, that's all going to go away. Once
I hope eventually it all goes away because we trust people again.
Well,
you never can go back to do that though.
I don't think we're just going to. You're never going to be able to do that, Tom, because that's a reflection of a homogeneous society that we don't have anymore. And you know, our global diversity means we've brought in and we will and we've homegrown people who are, you know, Oklahoma City bombers or shoe bombers or whatever.
Well, but therein lies the question. I mean, if when we started doing this after 9/11, you can have two ways of looking at it. You can say, and I was on the board of the SIBO before that when they were doing security stuff. And Lou, it's bizarre. If you've ever been on a board where the guy gives the firm that comes in, it's looking to have all these contracts, comes in and gives you the security thing. Now my view is, and it's, you know, it's somewhat naive, but then again it's not really. If you can't protect everybody, you can't protect anybody. So the idea of spending millions of dollars to harden up the Federal Reserve here to make sure those guys don't get shot while everybody's just walking freely on the other side of the street, to me is about as stupid as it gets. Because okay, if you can't figure out a way to protect people on a CTA bus, what makes you think that the guy's only going to blow up an airplane? So who gets protected and who gets the contracts? I mean, the CBOE board, I'm sitting there and the guy comes in and he's like, "Well, you don't have things in the street where people could drive a truck through your front door." Okay. You know, you put, when people just bring their badges at the end of the day, they just drop their badges in a big spot because they would hang your badges up downstairs. But when you left, everybody just piled them on the counter and people hung them up. They didn't. In the morning, you went in, it was your badge was there, and they had it cleaned every 2 weeks for you. It was never an issue. "Oh man, you have an idea how unsecure that is. Everybody can grab one of these badges." Okay, but at some point, Lou, it never happened. I mean, which isn't to say, I mean, I don't know what the answer is, because if you make it so that every place Lou or me walks, there's a guard next to us. Well, then if I'm going to shoot somebody, I'm just going to shoot the guy next to you that isn't a guy. I mean, you can protect yourself, but you can't. We can't protect everybody, and we're finding that out. Even in Britain, where they don't let people have guns, if you want to kill somebody, you drive a car through a crowd of 500 people. You can still screw people up. I mean, I don't know how you where you get to the end of the security company, you know, drain of, I have 10 people standing in my building. We go to the Board of Trade building at night. We walk out of the bar, there's 5 people standing there. What are they doing, Lou? They're not armed. They don't even have a walkie-talkie. They're just security. What a waste of young people's time. Man, well, I mean, at some point, I mean, what do you? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, if you and I walk around all day long unprotected, I don't know how much money I want to spend to protect another guy.
Well, okay, so obviously the protection gain is based on a cost benefit economics again, cost-benefit system of if this place, given that this place is important and visible and occupies a key role within this city's culture, an attack on this place that shuts it down or kills a bunch of people or causes it to go to cease operation is going to be a significant risk. So we're going to defend that. Somebody hitting a bus is not as much, I mean, it's terror, but it's not as much of a risk to structural concerns as an attack on the Board of Trade or an attack on O'Hare or Midway. So the security around those places gets ramped up, and we accept a certain level of risk in terms of our daily lives with other methods of transportation. Some event happens, some terrible event happens that causes people to react, like in Britain. They had those train bombings, those train station bombings, where the Islamic fundamentalists left suitcases on like 7 or 8 trains, I don't think it killed over 100 people, but it killed a number of people, caused total chaos in London. Well, now if you want to get yourself in trouble in a hurry, leave a bag on a London tube station. Forget your bag there, or put your bag down and walk away from it in the tube station. You'll have five cops there in like 30 seconds. So again, probably an overreaction.
If their goal was to change society, they have how many people in this country are in police or security? Like 500,000 or something? And now we're gonna have how many of these masked idiots? They're running around. I mean, how many? I mean, at some point it becomes bizarre. Who's going to guard the guards, Lou? I mean, there's a level here where you got
to. Well, that's right, and that's to alleviate some of these issues. That's why you're using these digital systems that are at least slightly more secure than using, people to look at pieces of paper. And anyway, I wanted to make you aware of that because I'm pretty sure you weren't aware.
No, I was not.
You needed a British visa.
I did not. I'm going to say there isn't a person listening to the show today who was aware.
Okay, well, perhaps we've performed a public service, but you can ask Andrew.
Just kind of curious what if you just would have landed on British air and didn't have one, what would have happened to you?
I would have been denied entry into the country, at least initially.
Yeah, but you're there.
Yeah, but they
there's got to be a way for you to get one there. I would think.
I would think so, but I'm not sure. Because like I said, I didn't see I don't know how much of a problem it is, because I would have expected to see, which we would have done here, I would have expected to see some sign up saying, if you don't have a British visa, go to this room and get one.
Yeah.
and then come on back.
Sounds like we should have a chief and Lou little thing. If you forgot your visa, I can get you one for $100.
Yeah, well, if we knew a guy who knew a guy in London, that would be the way to do it. We would set up a little kiosk in O'Hare, saying, need a British visa?
Yeah, loser Americans who didn't read the rules. Here you go.
Yeah.
For the simple price of $100 plus the 32, I could get you your visa in 2 minutes.
That's right. That's capital. That's capitalism, baby.
Actually, it's not a bad idea.
No. Well, and I mean, I don't know when you last applied for a passport, but if you go online to apply for a passport, there's like 5 companies that come up before you get to the U.S. Passport Office site that say, we will do this for you. We take it out of the hands of the government. You don't have to rely on the post office or anything like that. We'll send you a thing for the mailer, the PDF, so that you can print out a label for an envelope that'll go via FedEx or UPS. It comes right to us. We check all your paperwork. We make sure it's good. We hand carry it to the passport office to make sure it's properly It's properly vetted. We monitor it 24/7 to make sure they're turning it around as quickly as possible, and then we send it back to you for a fee of like $100.
One passport ago, I don't know who I was doing business with. Was it CBOE or somebody? Somebody wanted to send me overseas to do some lecturing, and mine had expired. So I go over to the passport place here. It's right downtown. It was right downtown.
Yeah.
And of course, some guy goes, I can expedite it for you for like $200. I'm going, I might have to go out of town. So I give the guy the $200. It was about the same length of time. So the next time, it wasn't a government shutdown. I don't think it was COVID. But the next, and of course, guess what? After I had to get an expedited passport, I never used it in 10 years.
Yeah.
After having to get it expedited. So next time I go, I'm just going to go, the post office? I got my application. I filled it out. I went over to Walgreens, and the guy took my picture, and he goes, no. He actually took a real nice picture of me, which is hard to do. Way better than my driver's license. Then it was, if you want to expedite it, you send it like to Philadelphia or someplace, and it costs X, or you can send it somewhere else for just a regular price. I just sent it somewhere else for regular price. Lou, I got it in like 2 weeks. But just using the regular old system was way better than paying up for the expedited.
Yeah. Well, so my nightmare story, and this is, we were going somewhere for Christmas that required passports. And so we're all at the airport, you know, two kids, a wife and me, and we're at the airport. And we're standing in line there and checking our, you know, getting our check-in and getting our bag tags. And I hear this agent talking to a family. And it's like seven or eight people, and it's like three generations, you know, kids, parents, grandparents. And the agent goes, okay, let me see. They were going to like Turks and Caicos or someplace like that, you know, some place.
Is that us or is that passports. Brits? Is that us?
Yeah.
It's got to be Brits, huh?
Well, no, these were Americans. And
I mean, Turks and Caicos is UK or who are they?
Yeah, I think it is UK. Yeah. It's either UK or the Netherlands. Anyway, and so I hear this, the agent go, okay, let me see passports. And all of a sudden he goes, sir, he looks at, and I look over, and he's looking at the grandfather. He goes, your passport's expired. You can't get on the airplane. You've got to get a passport renewed. And this is at 5 a.m. on a Saturday.
Right.
Yeah. And I just thought, holy cow, what a bomb drop to hit right as, you know, just before you get on the airplane, and you got eight other people that are ready to go, and now granddad, you know, who probably doesn't even live in Chicago, he's just there because they're all going together, now granddad cannot get on the airplane, and it's not something you can just fix. He's got to go get a whole new passport.
Oh yeah.
And I just thought, man, so now every trip, you know, pull the passport out, make sure the date's good, make sure, you know, I cross-check that. That's my nightmare story.
Well, yeah. You can't. You used to be able to get into Canada with a driver's license. Now you need one of the. You can use one of the passport cards to drive in. You still need the regular passport to fly in.
Yep. Oh yeah. No. This is a lot of this. A lot of this border control has been set up to stop criminal elements, international smuggling, human trafficking, all of this stuff, and it's why. You know, we put this situation, again, it's like gun control, Chief. This situation works against the interests of the law-abiding citizens. And we opened up our border and let millions of people in. You want to talk about human trafficking? We basically were a human trafficking center.
We have no idea how many people we let in, Lou.
I know. And we have no idea.
The count that people keep talking about, and I sent this out to everybody, the count we keep talking about are people that came over during the Biden administration. Somebody got the idea, instead of, if somebody made it over here and we caught them, instead of, I don't know what you could do with them, hold them or try them or do something, they were just sending them back. And they were considered a crossing. So those people are, and if the guy tried it 10 times in 20 days, he was counted 10 times and he still wasn't here. The count of people that actually made it in, you don't have, because they made it in. You know.
Well,
we count on people that came in and were sent back, and maybe made it through the fifth time, maybe not.
We know, we know based on the welfare rolls and the assistance rolls.
Welfare?
We know
those it's people in the don't millions. Get welfare.
Pardon me?
Those people don't get welfare.
Yes, they do. I don't know what's happening.
Every
in
time
Chicago,
I talk to somebody who listens to Newsmax, the number goes up 5 million. Last weekend it was 20 million.
It numbers in the millions, and that's just based on the assistance, the records that we have from the public assistance entities that are providing shelter, cards, you know, prepaid cards, phones, to the people coming across the border who need help, and that number is in the millions.
Research I've done was it ballooned up about 4 million, and about a million of them have gone back because they don't want to be here.
I hope that's right. That's very low. I hope that's right.
Because there's people here that are on visas, there are people on work visas, there's all kinds of stuff. There's people that are on student visas. There are people most of the people that are here, quote, illegally, were on student visas and never went home.
Or on work visas and never went home. But there are a lot of them. There are 55 million visas that have been issued that are outstanding.
Elon Musk, we could go after him and throw him out, right? Because he lied on every application. We're not going to do that though, because he's got money.
I think he's a green card, isn't he?
No, he came over on a student visa and never went back.
Okay.
But now he's a citizen, I think, and we weren't
enforcing it then, so now we are.
Okay, well, we're enforcing it to some people.
No, we're enforcing it. Timing is everything. Now we're enforcing it.
In the Chicago area, Lou, it is so racist it's scary. Anybody who's Hispanic is pulled over. Last week they got a guy who they arrested a guy. Turns out he's here on a legitimate visa. So his family had to bring the visa over to wherever these guys are holding them. So they gave him a $130 ticket for not having the papers on him.
Okay.
That's okay now? I mean, that's cool.
I mean, it's the law.
It's a 1952 law that nobody's talked about since 1952.
Okay, well, that's...
So did we know the ICE agents could issue tickets? Do you have your papers on you? It's like a Nazi movie. Your papers, please.
Well, I mean, if you're again, high trust society to low trust society.
Well, speaking about no trust, a couple of priests showed up at the holding center last Sunday to try and go in and give people communion, and they kicked them out.
Good.
You're not trusting priests?
Yep. Good.
Why?
Because it was a political stunt.
How do you know they
were priests? How do you know they weren't smuggling drugs?
Well, maybe they should have an ID card for priests.
How do you know? Again, this is the issue. So, there's enough shenanigans surrounding that I want those facilities secure. I'm going to check off. You guys have a great week and a good weekend.
SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 143. Do we have our guys?
Yes, you do.
How are you?
Good morning.
Very good. I caught the tail end. I have some information on the travel requirements to the UK. Since January 8th of this year, all U.S. citizens traveling to UK, unless you have a UK visa or legal residency in the UK, you must have an electronic travel authorization, which you can get, over the internet. Costs £10 or $12.75. May take up to 3 working days to process this. And also, if you're transiting through one of the UK airports like Heathrow or Gatwick, you also need this electronic travel authorization. So say your ultimate destination is Berlin, but you're going through Heathrow and you're just transiting through, you still need this. So
well, that's what Lou was saying. He was saying if you go to United, it tells you right on the site, but he was going British Air and it didn't tell him.
Oh, yeah. So this information is from the U.S. Embassy in the U.K. So I'm surprised it started. Okay, so they did it because it's in retaliation for us requiring the same type of visa for citizens of the U.K. So it was a tit-for-tat situation.
Are we systematically screwing up this world? I'm still reeling from the comment that you can't let a priest in because he might be a terrorist.
No, they were several priests. I saw the video. Some of them were in their vestments, and people in the protesters, they knew these people. That, you know, that's Father so-and-so, and that's Bishop so-and-so from... yeah, and this has occurred in other cities, too, where they're, you know, these ICE facilities, New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, for example. My God, they arrested a congresswoman who was trying to go in there and see how, you know, see what the conditions were like, and the mayor. They arrested the mayor in Newark. Yeah, these people are out of hand. But I'm still trying to figure out what Trump's up to on Saturday during this No Kings protest, which is now they're estimating between 15 and 20 million people. He's planning to have the Navy fire some missiles over Interstate 5 in Southern California to impact in Camp Pendleton, where J.D. Vance is going to be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the Marine Corps. And Governor Newsom now, he says, unless I get some information on what's up here, I'm going to have to close Interstate 5 between L.A. and San Diego. Can you imagine?
These, but you know, it is the I was in, not that I was ever in a bar, but Sunday night I was downstairs, and I'm talking to two people, and one of them is some lady who's off the deep end on the, you know, Trumper type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't, you don't even realize how horrible and racist you sound. I said, well, you know, they arrested all these people, and half of them were citizens. They didn't get out for like 4 hours. So what? It just happens. And then
it's called they call it the Kavanaugh stop because yeah. Justice Kavanaugh, you know, he said, oh, well, all they're going to do is detain you until they find out you're okay, and then they'll let you go. Right.
And then I said something about, well, you know, what about not letting the priests in for communion? Well, that's okay. She goes, they don't have any rights. They're not citizens. I said, well, first of all, Second Amendment does not say that, but I wasn't going to go into this with like a bartender. then the guy next to me, he's kind of on the other end of the thing, and he goes, isn't this terrific? We're going to take a bunch of people that probably wish they were there on January 6th. They're living in a trailer. They hate everybody, and we're going to give them a $50,000 bonus and tell them they can wear a mask, grab a gun, and roust people all day long. He goes, that's America? So talk about two different points of view.
Yeah.
I'm in the same bar stool. This is how far apart we are. Some people love that. You know, you get to carry a gun and shove people around. The other night they used tear gas to hit the police. There was a massive traffic accident.
Right.
And so the police respond to it. Of course, the crowd, because the ICE is pulling people out of one of the cars, and they tear gas the crowd. They tear gas the police too.
Yeah, I saw that. You know what I've been doing here, and you know, there's a lot of ethnic small little grocery stores, markets that cater, and you know, whether it's Middle Eastern food or Mexican food, Latin American food, Filipino food, whatever. I've been patronizing these places because not only has tariffs hit them very bad for the stuff that they have to import that you can't get here, but people in their community are afraid to go out because you don't know what's going to happen. There was a lady, wasn't there? I think there was a lady in Chicago was on her way to the store to get something to make dinner, and she got picked up.
Well, they're hanging around outside of churches.
Yeah,
which I don't even think you did. Whatever. Andrew? How do we justify blowing up some ship on the high seas?
You avoid producing any evidence or legal analysis, and you just say the president can do anything.
When are even Republicans going to go, this is a little too far? Ever?
I just read a very interesting and depressing column on that by somebody who writes for a publication called The Bulwark of Republicans or former Republicans who are raising this kind of question. And the authors said, you know, particularly for young Republicans, there's a problem. People assume that they're going to get oriented to the old American values, and the author Jonathan Last. He said, the problem is for young Republicans, they're coming of age for the last decade. They've only known this kind of Trumpism. So they don't have any grounding of the party that used to be. So he said, that's not a predictable solution, to have people remember that the party of Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, and Eisenhower, and all that, or Reagan for that matter, doesn't go for this.
Well, it is somehow or another, I mean, everybody, I'm going to show my age here a little bit, everybody remembers, you know, Gunsmoke, where Matt Dillon, if the guy was an idiot, smack him upside the head and say, leave town. Or maybe you watched, was it NYPD Blue, or Andy Sipowicz would tune somebody up, you know, to get a confession that saves somebody else. And you get this idea that if I only could get at these criminals, I'd fix it for them or something. But I think most people that have any kind of an education or half a brain realize that that's TV, and that Matt Dillon was above reproach. He was purer than Pharaoh's wife. So, to a certain extent, was Andy Sipowicz. He would never tune somebody up if he wasn't for the greater good. That doesn't, and somehow, even people that are on this show have this bizarre idea that at the bottom of all this stuff, it's a very moral, very far-seeking, far-thinking man that is just doing this as a way to rustle things up, get things done, and land us all in a better place. The problem is, Donald Trump is not Matt Dillon. He's not Andy Sipowicz. He doesn't have a moral bone in his body.
I mean, he's had a couple of missed kitties in his background, hasn't he?
You know, But I mean, what is the mechanism to this? I mean, how do we decide to declare war in Venezuela because you're pissed at him? The latest is, I don't know if you saw yesterday, you guys probably did, that the Argentinian deal is contingent on if his guy wins the election. How does anybody even think of something like that?
Yeah.
Well, and of course, one of the things we're saying is the powerlessness of parts of his own constituency. So we talked about it last week, the soybean farmers, particularly in the Dakotas, that are reliant on China, and that was a very interesting point you made about how Illinois, at least they can send this stuff down the Mississippi River and find different markets. But they're horrified out there in the Great Plains, Republican, MAGA areas, but they can't do anything because their senators and congresspeople are totally beholden to the Trump apparatus. So Argentina gets a $20 billion bribe from U.S. taxpayers just on the say-so of the Treasury Secretary, who's actually benefiting one of his cronies, a Wall Street guy, Rob Citrone, who's bought all these bonds for Argentina that are now going up because of the $20 billion.
Why can't... I mean, I guess I understand because people have a life. They don't do what I do all day or what you guys do all day. The amount of chicanery in the last 3 weeks. I actually had somebody tell me, actually the same lady Monday night. I said the chicanery and the front running of these announcements. We're talking 3% and 4% some of these days in the markets. We went a whole, was it 2 or 3 years in the Obama administration? I'm not saying that was good or bad, but we didn't make a 1% move. It was actually pretty damn boring. Now we make a 1% move in like 20 minutes. So something will come out, and we're talking 300-400 points in the NASDAQ. And the response, the most ignorant response, what about Nancy Pelosi? I go, you're not even talking about the same page. She was aware of which way the winds were blowing for 35 years, and she and her husband invested well based on that. That's not the same as front-running a market-moving event 30 seconds before you say it. What do you mean? It's the same thing. No, it's not. But the issue with the and this is what happens. I don't know if I told you guys this. Well, the night before all the bars closed down in COVID, right? I have three kind of favorite places here in Chicago, and I went to all three of them. And I had a drink, and I said, here's to you guys. I know this place will reopen. I just hope when it does, it's under the same ownership. And all three of them, it turns out the answer is yes. The one on the Board of Trade's wobbling a little bit because the building's not that full. But now, when you say the farmers in North Dakota and Trump is going to bail them out, now, you guys and Jimmy are smart enough to realize, who's they? You know, I mean, who's the they? If the current crop of people, like I think what happened last time in his first term, if a lot of the current crop of people were forced to sell out and some new person came in, bought it on the cheap, maybe somebody from Washington, maybe, you know, some big hedge fund place, and all of a sudden the money piles into the system, they're going to get the dough, not the guy who's gone, right? The guy who's gone is just gone. I mean, the little nuances to this that you guys pick up on, isn't one of the big guys in the cabinet members, isn't he grabbing a whole bunch of farmland?
It's the guy who's Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, who arranged the $20 billion to go to his crony. He owns thousands of acres of North Dakota soybean land. And what you sketch out is a very predictable event that he, you know, the small fry have to sell out on the cheap, and the big boys who have ridden out the storm, if not created the storm, come in and buy it up. I just saw in the last couple of days a few separate videos of farmers out there saying they don't want money, they want markets, because money just is a temporary solution. What they need is to be in a predictable way to invest, buy machinery, pay off their machinery loans, buy seed, and stay in business. Not
well. If there was a solution that made any sort of sense, I bet we could estimate on the show, maybe even in the next 5 minutes, what they really have is they have a big basis cost. Because they're up there, and the markets are here to a certain extent. All right, so they can't go on the train the other way. They could come on the train this way to the Mississippi up north, and I'm going to say that's probably $3 a bushel, which puts them below break even and not worth doing, would be my guess. So they're probably storing the stuff. Which doesn't get you anything because you paid for the seed, like you say, you paid for the fertilizer. Well, you don't need that much fertilizer for soybeans, not like corn. But what you could do is if you were impacting those areas, you could rebate everybody $2.50 to $3 a bushel to get it on the train coming this way. So guess what? You're at least not wasting it. And you could do something like that. Or you could give them $3 a bushel towards next year's seed or something, if you actually wanted to help, and not have somebody else buy the damn place first and send him a big check or something. The three of us could figure out a way to do this if we wanted to, but we don't really, do we?
Well, a very simple thing. There's four senators in the Dakotas. If they, four Republican U.S. senators, most of them, not that long ago, used to be Democrats. But if the four U.S. senators said, we need special legislation and we're going to insist on it, then that would force the Senate and Congress to act in a way. The margins are so narrow. But they won't do it because they don't want to. They're more beholden to the Treasury Secretary, the Trump view of the world, than they are to these farmers. So there's the solution. And by the way, the House of Representatives has been out of session since earlier mid-September. So the solutions that are ordained in the Constitution and history through Congress, They're not there.
But I mean, the minimum of I'm going to say, Jimmy, why don't you look it up? I think soybeans are like, are they $14 a bushel? I'm not sure, but say it is. Let's just pick a number. If it's 14, I'm going to say that's low. Actually, they're probably more like a 12, but that's low. So these guys are having a bad year to start with. So if they have to pay a buck to get it to Seattle, they're probably barely breaking even, but they are breaking even. Well, now if they can't go that way, it's going to cost them $3 to go the other way. Which means they're probably going to lose $2 a bushel, or just keep it there. The point is, they're not getting any cash back, so they're broke. So if we could find a way to help them with the $2 and at least get everybody to break even, we buy a year, and it's not that hard to do.
And I've read that J.D. Vance is invested in a company that's just waiting with bated breath for these farms to go under.
I've heard the same thing.
So they can buy them all up.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, you know, it's pretty awful when you think about it, right?
Horrible.
Actually, I got them at like $10 a barrel. Yikes. We just had, we talked a little bit with Lou earlier, and actually on the way in, Jimmy and I were listening to News Radio 78, and there's all these demonstrations and the thing going on in New York City, and and you guys are, even though you're in the lawyer end, you're more than half-assed economists on top of it. When you shift from society, I mean, Lou was talking about we went from a trust society to a non-trust society. When you shift in a society where people really can't earn enough to do the things Americans were used to doing, although people are ratcheting back pretty easily, more easily than I would have guessed. When you start doing that, your political system is going to have a strain to it, because there's a certain amount. It's not so much how much people have. It's if the future's brighter, they'll roll with it. But this has been going on a while. My dentist, who passed a while ago, had, I'm thinking, 8, 9, 10 kids, something like that, guys. He bought a practice. They use the term out of school. He bought a practice. I'm going to say the guy who had the practice went back to research and went to work for some big universities. Pretty good guy. Bought the practice, put all 10 kids through college back in the day, and had a very nice life as a dentist. Now, his daughter is a dentist. She's like 15 years out. She goes, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that I ever can buy a practice, that I could ever become an independent. I'm going to be working for somebody forever. And she actually loved it so much, she became a dentist down at Fort Leavenworth, of all places. she says, if you really want to do dentistry, I mean, she goes, everybody around here, she goes, everybody around here has been coming to see Dad their whole life. Nobody has any problems. you get a crown once in a while, or something this, or you might get a root canal. She goes, but basically everybody's teeth are good. See, the people down there, you wouldn't believe the stuff I see. I actually get to be a dentist, she says.
Well, hopefully she'll be filling cavities of a lot of people from the Trump administration.
So what is the hot news? I've been bringing stuff up. You guys know what the hot news is. I hear bits and pieces of what's going on. How, in terms of, how do the Republicans continue to keep the House out? I mean, when everybody, puts blame on these shutdowns, that can't be a good idea, is it?
Well, they, for one thing, as soon as they come back, the 200, they have to swear on the new Arizona congresswoman, and that means 218 votes to open the Epstein files. So Mike Johnson and Trump do not want to reconvene the House, because then that starts momentum to look into these very, very ominous, horrible records, videos, reports about the big boys and their relationships with Epstein. So basically, people are on holiday while we have all these disasters. People in the House are on holiday. They're getting all of their benefits. But the rest of the public just is wondering, when are they going to go back to work?
Well, I just wanted to say that, if you know, all the political prognostication was, well, who would be the first Republicans in the House that might go up against Trump, start criticizing him? You know, and they're talking, oh, well, this congressperson from this purple district, Republican, but, you know, a suburb of whatever big city, it would be the first one. I did not have on my bingo card that that person would turn out to be Marjorie Taylor Greene, who apparently she, not only on the Epstein matter, she's now criticizing Trump for inflation, for all kinds of the economic problems we're seeing now.
Health. She's got a disabled child, yeah, as I understand. Right. Of course, she's from rural Georgia and is conservative, or radically conservative.
Well, but I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I shouldn't. Yeah. But my feeling is, only because Trump and Epstein had the fight years ago over the piece of property that Trump essentially screwed him out of or something. I don't know, but they were fighting over a piece of property, and Trump got it, and then he sold it to the Russians or something. Anyway,
And then Trump flipped it to one of the Russian oligarchs. It was a piece of property adjacent, very close to Mar-a-Lago, but not actually adjacent to it. And Epstein wanted it. Maybe he wanted to be closer to Mar-a-Lago for obvious reasons. He used to get a lot of these young girls that were working there out of there. But
he had a place not that far away.
His place was
less than a mile away.
Intercoastal waterway where Mar-a-Lago is actually on the ocean.
Well, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that I don't think that Trump is actually gonna be the big fish. I think he got away from him fast enough to where he's not on any of the stuff down at the island. Now, the stuff in Manhattan's different, but nobody's really looking at that. Because that place seemed like a real cesspool, this place in his... But anyway, what I'm saying is, I don't think that Trump's on the tapes. This is just one man's opinion to any huge extent. But I think a bunch of people are. Who do you think the people are?
Well, they're big names. I've got four books on this, and I'm helping look at another one that's coming out, helping a publisher. Very big names. The question is that I think will be illuminated by some of these so-called files, which are actually photos and all kinds of things. The question is, was Epstein just using them as part of his attempts to look like a serious financier and philanthropist, which is both phony deals, but if you're surrounded by top people, you give the illusion, or were they involved in his activities? And I would just say, to your suggestion, and I can pop up with some names if you want, Chief, but the 2 points. One about Trump. He was best friends with Epstein for a decade before break.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
For 15 years. And best friends do things together. So whatever their dispute in 2004, they were thick as thieves for a long time before that with their activities.
Yeah, depending on when Epstein started filming at the Manhattan home, that could mean the difference between Trump being on some tapes or not being on some tapes. Andy and I, we basically have him placed with very young girls in 1994 at the Epstein, Wexner Mansion is what it is in Manhattan.
But I was trying to be clear. I think the stuff in Manhattan, I think a lot of people were involved in that, but I bet you're going to find that Trump never went to the island.
I would be surprised he would go there myself, but yeah. There's another place where a lot of this took place, and it was the Epstein Ranch in New Mexico, which was so remote, nobody would have had any idea what was going on there.
Did he get that from the guy in Ohio?
Pardon?
Did he get that from the guy in Ohio?
I'm not sure if it came from Wexner or not, but also...
No, it came from somebody named King.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows a lot about King.
Former governor of New Mexico. You mentioned the guy in Ohio. That's Wexner. Epstein did live at least part-time in a home he bought in an enclave that basically was built by Wexner outside of Columbus.
What was his... we got to go to break here. What was his business?
He was the guy that started all these box stores and malls. The Gap, the Limited.
That's right. He was the Gap and the Limited, right?
Victoria's Secret,
yeah, Victoria's too. Secrets. And that's what gave him access a lot of these clothing stores to these young models for their catalogs.
That's all part of the system. And by the way, last quick point before break. But Trump is a control freak, and so he doesn't need to go to, in effect, the Hugh Hefner mansion on the island, because he's running his own operations. He doesn't need to be a supplicant at the Epstein show.
S&P futures up 20, NASDAQ futures up 120. Be right back. Quick break, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Toto? I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We're back.
SP futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 123. Guys, the soybean price is like $10, $10 to $10.50. So those guys are kind of hurting, sort of anyway. We don't spend too much more time on this, but whenever you see something like this, and you see these Epstein things, and I go back to the Kennedy assassination, which I know you guys have done a lot of work on, and every president somewhere during the campaign, or everybody even running for office, somebody somewhere will say, "Hey, are you going to let loose the Kennedy files?" And the answer is invariably yes. This has been going on for 40 years, and as soon as they get there, the answer is no. So clearly, there is a name in there or two that, well, to me anyway, I won't say clearly, but there's something when they see it, the rack is still too hot to touch. And you wonder, who's that name? And who are we really protecting in the Epstein? So it could be the prince in Europe, for God's sake. It might not be Trump that we're protecting. It might be somebody else. It could be, somebody... five of the biggest kings of industry right now that maybe run companies that have all the money in the world. I mean, those people don't want their name out I don't know. I'm not so sure Trump even cares. Those guys probably really do. I mean, there's got to be somebody in there we're protecting. And I'm not on the edge of it that it's always just going to be Trump. I don't believe that. I honestly don't. I mean, I think
it's not just Trump. And let me draw on that comparison, because actually for years I've been on the board of a research group on the JFK assassination. It's different levels of evidence. So, for example, on the JFK assassination, something like 6 million pages have been declassified. And so anybody who cares, 3,000 books have been written about the JFK assassination. So people who want to know what happened, they have a vast trove of information that's out there that they can reasonably know what happened with the JFK assassination. But there's never going to be a total smoking gun. It's an assassination. People don't write memos and planning memos about it. The difference with Trump is that Epstein was filming every room, including bathrooms, and some of his properties. And he was inviting all of these big shots, and it's not just one or two members of the royal family or one or two technocrats or politicians. He had lots of them. So to answer your question, there's many people who are potentially embarrassed, but there's also evidence that the FBI now has of everything that they were doing, at least in his properties, including when they'd go to the bathroom. And so you can say, well, that's unfair to have the bathroom pictures, but what about the other pictures? So it's a different level of evidence. If the FBI released everything on JFK, you wouldn't learn that much more than you already know. And they did release some significant stuff this year. But with Epstein, the public would get a frightening and horrifying view of lots of people. And I would bet one of them is
lots of rich people.
Others,
yeah.
Others, too.
I would also add that knowing what Trump has done over the years, there is a danger, only because he's president now, that he may have decided to replace Epstein as the chief blackmailer and extortionist with these other people whose names are in these files. Like, you want me to release a file on, like, how about kicking some money into my whatever? Look what he's done with colleges, universities, law firms. I don't think you can put that past this guy.
I've never heard that, but it sounds very logical, Wayne, because he, through his FBI operatives, he has all of the stuff. So why would he want to make it public, even to take your point, Chief, even if he's not there, which I don't believe, because there's reporting that he's mentioned 1,000 times, but even if he's innocent and all of that.
I never said he was innocent. What I said was, I don't know if he was on the island.
Oh, I don't think he was.
I agree with you. I don't think he was down there, only because it's an island, and I think he, you know, when you're on an island, okay, he's on Palm Beach Island.
Yeah.
It's an island of billionaires, but I don't think the guy likes to be constrained and at someone else's mercy, so to speak, especially a small island like St. James Island.
Yeah.
I don't blame him, actually, but go ahead.
But to go to Wayne's point, which I've never heard before, but it's so logical. Yeah, if he's got evidence on all of these billionaires and royal family and stuff that hasn't come out, and people like Bill Richardson, Bill Clinton, when do you want to keep it secret and use it for his own purposes?
Well, why would you think, if we actually have people from Middle East, Britain. Well, starting with the guy, what's her name's dad, Maxwell's dad. I mean,
yeah,
you know, knowledge is power. What makes any of us think that the FBI and the CIA, without, I'm not accusing them of having Epstein as their stooge, but you mean they don't care if some Saudi guy comes over here and spends $250,000 and mess around with young girls over the weekend? That's news I think the CIA would want.
Oh, the CIA has used all manners of prostitutes over the years, including children. And they're not the only ones. The Russians did it, you know, Soviets before them, and the Brits and whatnot. But yeah, no, that's valid. Valid thing in the world of intelligence, anything's fair game.
Isn't that the reason why Kennedy got assigned to the PT boats? Because in Washington he was telling too many secrets to the women he was sleeping with.
Not quite, but you're close. He was an attaché in Washington, and his father, Joe Kennedy, developed concerns because Kennedy was having an affair with a very beautiful woman from Europe, Anna Arvin, a real beauty who had been spotted years before in the company of Hitler. And
God,
I think she was from Denmark.
Oh God,
yeah.
All right.
And so Kennedy put pressure on both the Roosevelt administration, but also worked with Hoover to develop a dossier on his own son.
what a nice guy.
to be able to persuade the Roosevelt administration to get Kennedy, his son, transferred down to Virginia and out of the clutches of this Anna Arvin. I'm not sure it directly led to the PT boat, but it was...
Well, they sure shipped them far enough out of Washington to the South Pacific.
Well, that's an interesting point. But here's one other kind of analogy with the JFK assassination and Epstein. People want us to believe, and when I say people, the news media, investigators, conventional wisdom, that these are extremely isolated assassins or perverts, and it comforts the power structure to think, oh, what an amazing, unique pervert Epstein is, thank goodness he's dead. But it happens that Wayne is one of the reigning national experts.
You were going to say reigning national perverts, but you said experts.
Well, no, he doesn't answer.
Oh, well. Depends on who you talk to.
On that, many of these scandals are connected, and if you start thinking about it, how would one person be able to blackmail everybody if they weren't connected, not just in their own time, but as part of a multi-generational pattern? And it happens, I don't know if we should get into it, so I'll just touch lightly on it.
Well, yeah, let's tune, get everybody excited for next week. Tune it up a little bit.
Well, there was a big case in Washington when I was still in business, 2006 or so, the trial of the D.C. Madam, and her name was Jean Palfrey. And it dominated the news that, oh my gosh, you've got a madam, and she's on trial for madam type activities. Well, she gave Wayne a list, records of 20,000 customer names.
Phone
numbers. Not names. And it was Wayne's mission to connect phone numbers and names. And I don't know if you want to leave it till next week or...
Well, for the listeners, especially the younger listeners, don't know, is when people had a phone number, it was like at their house. And there was a number you could call, and you would give them the phone number, and they would spit back at you it was the White Pages, they would tell you the name and the address, right?
Yeah. I was able to connect some of the numbers, but unfortunately, a lot of them even then went to cell phones. But the biggest block was when they go to a hotel, a lot of the numbers.
Or a payphone somewhere, or even worse.
But the larger point is the reason she wanted Wayne as a courageous reporter after she tried some other reporters who kind of lost her, at least in one case, is that she wanted to say, look, I'm not just one person doing all this stuff. She wanted to show that she was connected to larger entities that were working with her and decided that her time is up and throw her under the bus. And by getting out the names of some of the clients, if Wayne could connect things, that would tend to help her.
I had to go to the several libraries in the area that had these old copies of Haynes, I think it's called Haynes Crisscross, where you actually have the numbers and it gives you the names or address, names and addresses. That was a long and laborious process. And actually, it was funny. Basically, after I'd be doing this, I'd go to the press club bar later, in one case, I had discovered one of the customers was actually a journalist, and he happened to have been a member of the National Press Club.
God. Well, yeah, you do get, as you guys, the day you, maybe we'll do it again one of these days, a quick review of the Elaine Maxwell started with, like, was it her grandfather or her father out of Bell? I mean, all this stuff, it didn't just happen overnight. And one of these days, there's examples all over the place. I mean, the Denny Hastert story, when all of a sudden the guys, I mean, people were obviously using him, when I say obviously, it seems to be obvious, using him to do something. They knew they had something on him the whole way. And all of a sudden, when he's at home, kind of minding his own business, they decide to out the guy, and you know, he dies in jail or something. But, or you know, I don't know where he died. But all of a sudden,
I think he's still alive.
I don't think so, but I will.
I think he is. He lives a quiet life. I'll look it up right now while we're talking.
But I mean, all of a sudden, somebody somewhere decides, we can't use this guy anymore, or now it's time to out him, or now it's time to do something. And my always question is, who's that guy? You know.
Well, I don't know if Wayne wants to get into it, but first of all, Hastert is 83. He's still alive.
Okay. Didn't he have cancer? Didn't he get out of jail because he had cancer or some story or some deal?
Well, he wasn't doing well. He ended up losing a lot of weight. Now, I don't know if Wayne, who's a reigning expert, wants to get into why he was outed or not, but I'll just float that concept
for next week.
Yeah, but it seems like these guys, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, Epstein, if the CIA and FBI was somewhat involved, did they protect him for a while, and then all of a sudden they didn't want him anymore? I mean, there's a million questions once that starts to happen.
Well, that's it. So Alex Acosta, the guy that gave him that sweetheart deal the first time he was, you know, arrested and in Florida, and Acosta dropped all federal charges in lieu of the state of Florida bringing their own charges, and hence the sweetheart deal where he was only had to show up for prison at night.
And he also dropped, let me interrupt for half a second, he also made it clear that as part of the plea agreement, nobody else could be investigated.
Right.
It's highly unusual.
And Acosta is quoted as saying, he's intelligence, we have to leave him alone, he being Epstein.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it seems like they get into everybody. I mean, this guy, he was on the Croatian basketball team of all things. Somehow I meet him in the local pub, and we'll throw another guy. And boy, talk about a big dude, man! If he went for a rebound, and if you were near him, he'd end up in the third row. But and he was talking about he knew Tony Kukoc and those guys and played with those dudes over there. Well, he marries this Russian lady who got here through Germany and some other place. She didn't speak any German, but she ended up in a German finishing school for girls. You imagine how that went for her. But anyway, she ends up with like five languages. And their kid, who's evidently brilliant, was going to Loyola's real accelerated thing. The kid knows four languages. Well, the kid's a freshman. He was interviewed by the CIA. They already realized this kid's going to be going overseas, be doing a bunch of stuff. He could be an asset of some kind. They weren't paying him or anything, but they already knew who he was, how many languages he could say in the background of his mother and father who moved back and forth from Croatia and all these other places. Are they that intrusive? They seem to know where people are. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. But also, it's important to emphasize that it's like virtually every country, and you know, the absolute dictatorships, if they're small, they don't create secret agencies. That's actually part of government. So when we talk about, at least in my opinion, if we talk about our intelligence agencies doing things, it should be with an understanding that at least I have, that everybody else is doing it too. So it's a kaleidoscope where the people that are doing this for our agencies probably to some extent feel they need to do it to keep up with what the Russians and the other people are doing.
Yeah, I'm sure the ICE people really think they need to roust every Hispanic too, but I'm not so sure I agree with that.
Well, that's a different thing because for one thing, it doesn't have a long tradition.
Well, I mean, but you can only go so far down that road that everybody else is doing it. But I have to believe that if you knew Saudis were landing here with $250,000 to blow on a weekend, somebody wants to know about it, I would think.
Yeah, he was Egyptian, but here in Florida, Andy and I know the guy who wrote a book about Muhammad Atta, who was anything but a devout Muslim. He was, he was using drugs. He had an American girlfriend, all kinds of things that you would not think a guy that, you know, wants to visit, get a quick trip to his 77 virgins in the afterlife would be up to. But, yeah.
Well, let's mention a little bit more about it. The author is Daniel Hopsicker. He died a few years ago. Wayne and I had a chance to visit him before he died. But he wrote a book, Barry and the Boys, that became really the basis for this Tom Cruise movie, American Made. And one of his big scoops in this book... Oh, no, I'm conflating two of his books. Barry and the Boys is a great book, but the other was Welcome to Terrorland, that the same author did. And his big scoop is that he got tape-recorded lengthy interviews with Atta's girlfriend, who was a professional stripper.
Before we mention the name many more times, Atta was the brain behind 9/11, correct?
He was the chief pilot. He was on American Flight 11.
And sort of was the leader, allegedly. Yeah,
yeah. Leader of the group, yeah.
Yeah, so he's the big name there. And so the author got this interview with the former stripper who became a housewife, and her terms were, look, that was a part of my life when I was young. I want to put it behind me. I'm going to do one interview or series of interviews with this author. And she laid out, oh, they all love their Johnny Walker Black. One funny thing about the book is she said she got sick of him and at one point took all his stuff and threw it out of the second floor balcony of their motel onto the parking lot and told Muhammad Atta to get lost. She had a new boyfriend.
I don't think she was the first to ever do that, but
no, but she's talking about it on the record. She's got photos of herself with him about the number one terrorist.
God. Then the guy went and took down a building, the same loser. I mean, it's... Hey, you got to... Is there any chance, I mean, just concluding what we're talking about with Lou, is there any way that we back up on any of this stuff, out of the security and everybody looking at everybody like they're a crook? I mean, is there any... We blame it on people coming from other places, but really, the people doing the shooting are people that are right here. I mean,
well,
it's
we did go through the McCarthy era, which was maybe not like this because they weren't, you know, grabbing people just the way they looked off, you know, off the street. But it was a little more insidious, of course. If somebody could say, I think this guy's a communist, and essentially the same thing could happen. Or at least they'd lose their job. We did somewhat recover from that. I don't know about now, though. I think because people are they're in their own silos of information now, where back in the 40s and 50s, everybody was watching the same news on television or hearing it on the radio. That's not the case now.
And also they were unified by going through the Depression, World War II, and one of the little-known but pretty well-documented aspects of the fall of McCarthy was that the President Eisenhower went along with him to some extent for political reasons, but at one point, when McCarthy was getting totally out of control, and he was a drunk also, but Eisenhower
and maybe more than that.
Yeah, more than that. Actually, his next crusade was going to be going after gays at the CIA.
Really?
And considering his counsel was Roy Cohn and some of his allies were of that persuasion, at one point Eisenhower just passed the word, that's enough. And that was the end of McCarthy. And but we don't have an Eisenhower now. Republican president, war hero.
Now we got a president who was best friends of Roy Cohn.
Yeah. What do you guys make of two things? Two big questions. One, I hope we can do quick. The thing that the Secretary of Defense sent around, he wanted all the newspapers to sign it. They weren't going to say anything bad about him. What is that?
Yeah. Well, I haven't covered the Pentagon during the Iraq War. They had quite a huge press area there. They had their own working spaces and all. And Hegseth said, no, you're going to have to sign this guy saying, you'll give us copies of everything before you write it. We'll approve it before publication. Well, that's a violation of the First Amendment. So every hard pass, I was there as a temporary reporter, but every person who had a permanent pass to cover the Pentagon, which was probably about 200 people, they all had their press passes confiscated yesterday. You see them walking out of there with their boxes of all their stuff. Some people have been there covering the Pentagon for 20 years, and yesterday they walked out. Only one organization agreed to sign the agreement. That's One American News, which is owned by some billionaire crackpot out of San Diego who doesn't report news.
We talked a month ago, 6 weeks ago, about one of his Nimrods who was on CNBC talking about putting out fake news and stats or something. And who's the guy? God, I can see his face. Asked him, does that mean we have to run our... When he was talking about if you're a licensed place...
You're talking about the FCC guy, right?
Yeah, the FCC guy. And he goes...
Carr.
Yeah,
Brendan Carr.
And the one guy from on CNBC says, does that mean we have to, like, run our stuff by you? And he said something like, no, we're not going to go that far, or something along those lines.
Oh, he also said, well, we can either do it the easy way or the hard way, but, I mean, sort of like a mob boss.
But obviously there's some sort of a plan in the group, you know, whether Trump did it or somebody else.
It's Project 2025, and here's an amazing thing. I looked up Brendan Carr. He wrote the parts about communications and media for the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, which is to reorient the U.S. government and society, and that's being implemented now. Now, the amazing thing about this is that he was at a full-time job as a commissioner for the Federal Communications Commission since, I think, about 2011. So while he was working on this plan to change the U.S. government for this private foundation, the Heritage Foundation, he was, in effect, violating the Hatch Act by serving as one of five FCC commissioners regulating broadcasting, radio, and other electronic communications. And an obvious problem that no one...
Andrew, you've not figured out the law does not apply to them.
Exactly. And by the way, going back to this One America Network, which is the only one, Fox, Newsmax, they all refused to sign this thing, but One America Network did. And their chief correspondent is Matt Gaetz, who Wayne and I have looked into his background.
Oh, yeah.
And he couldn't be attorney general because his record of I'll leave it to Wayne to describe it, but
using Venmo to pay off underage girls.
Yeah. So he's the one guy at the one news organization that's now covering our Pentagon.
I guess a quick question there. Are they going to get away with it? Because when I say that, I sense that, like, a lot of younger people that Jimmy and I will talk to from time to time from the exchanges and so forth, they've managed to, I use the term brainwash, they managed to brainwash a lot of these younger people, and they don't even know what the American dream is. They think they're never going to own a car. They're never going to own a house. They're sort of okay with it. Not okay with it, but they can't do anything about it and don't think they ever can and can't change anything. There's no thought of, hey, this is bullshit. We better do something and change this. I don't see there's any even idea, like, you know, when we were younger, maybe because we were getting shot at over in Vietnam, young people were a lot more demonstrative, saying, I'm not going and I'm demonstrating. I'm not saying we should go demonstrate, but there was some idea that if you felt strong enough about something, you could maybe do something about it. These kids don't feel that way at all. Are these people that are going to change this society into this very, whatever you want to describe it, into this new world where only a few people, I'll call it a plutocracy. I'm not going to call it Nazi Germany. I'll call it a plutocracy. Is there a chance they can be stopped? I'm not so sure. What do you guys think?
Well, that's our burden and challenge as older people who knew what our country was like before this, to try to do what we can to show the way. But ultimately, it's up to the new people.
Okay, now the question is, we got a dash here. How are we doing so far?
Not good.
I'm saying it's not a smart-ass question. I'm saying, how are we doing so far, I guess? I don't know. I'm seeing some pushback in a lot of areas.
It all depends on the Supreme Court, and there's the rub.
How far do you think they're willing to go?
Well, we saw yesterday that it looks like they're going to abolish the enablement of the 15th Amendment, and that's the Voting Rights Act. So the New York Times yesterday published, maybe it's on their front page today, a map of the South. If the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is stricken, there will be probably only 5 or 6 or 7 Democrats in the entire South, from Florida to Texas, maybe in the middle of Atlanta, middle of Houston, because the whole South will be gerrymandered to Republican House control.
The only problem with that is things can change, and all of a sudden you gerrymander yourself. It's like the
that could happen in Texas with their new map, where apparently Trump is not all that popular in Texas anymore. So there could be a boomerang back on them, the Republicans.
Right, yeah. Last question: What is other than him, you know, kind of messing with the election and trying to, he didn't do so hot last time where the people he pushed didn't necessarily all win. I mean, are we convinced that 15, 16 months from now that if you're not enamored of Trump, that you won't win? Is it still going to be going on? And I guess my question is, what's the connection between him and the local races? Is it still that strong?
Go ahead, Andy.
Well, increasingly, mainstream commentators and even some officials say the true purpose of sending people to places like Chicago and doing what they're doing is so that they can send them in with their automatic weapons next year before the elections and intimidate people from voting in next November, a year from now, elections, so that the rural regions of places like Illinois will dominate, and people in Chicago, Milwaukee, et cetera, be too scared to come out of their houses and go to the voting polls.
Do you think it's going to be? On one hand, I'm appalled by what's happening. On the other hand, I don't know, it was one of you guys was saying, or somebody else on the show, this generation has to figure it out.
Yeah.
Are we going to come back to say, no, this is not us, and walk by the guy in the mask and the gun and vote the other way and get him the hell out of there, or are we going to kowtow to it? I mean, you and I can't make that call. Everybody else has to make it by themselves.
Well, yeah, the last No Kings protest I was at, I saw there was more people my age out there than there were of younger people. I hope that changes, because if it doesn't, it's a dismal future.
All right, guys. Well, on that note, where are you guys? Are you in Florida?
I'm in Florida. I'm down here. Yeah.
You guys managed to dodge a hurricane this year. Be happy about that?
None. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, it was predicted on the show, by the way. Our buddy Carl.
Oh.
Was talking about. He's also predicting. Now, he's not a weather guy, but evidently, La Nina and El Nino are perfectly in harmony.
I thought ICE picked them up already and deported them.
They might have, but which means that the hurricanes don't make it in the Gulf. They all hang up in the Atlantic, which has happened. He also is predicting a winter in Chicago that gave us Jane Byrne, nothing but cold and snow. So I hope that part's wrong.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means about you guys in Florida, but
we dodged a few bullets this year, it looks like.
Andrew, did you dodge that big northeaster we was bitching about last week?
Yeah, I had a very busy week, so I was nose to the grindstone.
Well, you weren't up in New York where it was pouring rain for 3 days or something.
Missed it.
Oh, well, good for you. All right, next week, guys. We'll chat back and forth as we always do. S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 146. Nice job, Jimmy. Tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
That's all, folks.